To know your will, to feel your smile. I want to be a faithful child who knows your voice, who trusts your way. No more compromise and no more.
It's hard to say when the word priest entered my vocabulary, but it probably happened thanks to the depiction of priests I saw in movies and on TV. Actors like Spencer Tracy, who played Father Flanagan in Boys Town, shaped my early understanding of priests. There were no priests in the Baptist and Presbyterian churches of my upbringing. We had pastors who served as teachers, counselors, and shepherds of the congregation, but they weren't quite the same as the priests I saw on the screen who administered sacraments and served as custodians of the sacred things of the church. This gets to the original intent of the priesthood. Christian priests, whether Catholic, Anglican, Lutheran, or Orthodox, are not the same as Israel's Levitical priests descended from Aaron. They do, however, perform many of the same functions, at least in spiritual terms. That's why it can be helpful to find out what God intended when he established Israel's priesthood. We might miss his intent if we get bogged down in the details about who is chosen as a priest, how they are set apart, what they wear, and how they process the sacrificial offerings. Even if we think we understand, we might get confused when we see priests doing things that seem, well, unpriestly. That includes diagnosing diseases, inspecting houses, judging court cases, leading armies, choosing political leaders, tending farms, and engaging in real estate transactions. These are activities we expect to see ordinary people doing, as in people who earn their living by practicing a trade or profession, just like you and me. Priests are supposed to be holy and above the common people somehow. They're supposed to have some knowledge of how God and human beings relate to one another, and they're supposed to use that knowledge to help people stay in touch with their Creator. That means performing intricate rituals, speaking in ancient languages, preaching inspiring sermons, and offering up lofty prayers. Priests are supposed to be different from our next-door neighbors, not only because they're too holy to do ordinary things, but because they're too busy with the things of God to have any idea what life is like down here among the masses. So, what are priests supposed to do? In a nutshell, they teach the people the difference between the holy and the common, unclean and profane. They're to do this not only as they engage in the ritual functions of their office, but as they engage in the ordinary daily activities that all people do. All the while, they're chosen and set apart by God to minister to Him and to the people as the mediator or bridge between the two. This brings us to the distinction between set-apart priests and ordinary people. I'm not sure how ordination of priests happens today in the Catholic, Anglican, and Orthodox churches, but I have an idea how it happened in ancient Israel. Exodus gives us the details about the special clothing the priests are to wear and how to sanctify them for their service. Leviticus tells us about Moses consecrating his brother Aaron and his sons according to those details. The climax of the process happened this way. Moses brought Aaron and his sons and washed them with water. He put the tunic on Aaron, tied the sash on him, clothed him with the robe, put the ephod on him, and tied the skillfully decorated sash of the ephod around him and fastened it on him. Then he put the breastplate on Aaron, and inside the breastplate he put the Urim and the Thummim. He set the turban on his head. And on front of the turban he set the golden plate, the holy crown, just as Adonai commanded Moses. He poured some of the anointing oil on Aaron's head and anointed him to consecrate him. Then Moses brought Aaron's sons and clothed them with tunics, tied sashes on them, and fastened headbands on them, as Adonai had commanded Moses. It must have been a grand ceremony. I wonder, though, if anyone remembered that less than a year earlier, Aaron had fashioned the golden calf Israel adopted as the object of their worship. Surely he remembered it. Did he wonder how he could be elevated to the office of high priest after falling so far into rebellion against the same God who called and commissioned him? I imagine he did, and I imagine Moses also pondered these things. Yet Moses understood the constant readiness of our God to redeem all who humble themselves before him. He probably also understood that Aaron and his sons were supposed to model that redemptive truth before the people. However badly they might be covered with sinful stains, and however much our adversary might accuse them, the heavenly judge is faithful to forgive, cleanse, and restore if their hearts remain true to him. That's what we see in Zechariah's prophetic vision of the consecration of the ultimate high priest. We call him Jesus, or Yeshua, but his name can also be translated as Joshua. It just so happened that Joshua was the name of the high priest in Zechariah's time. Then he showed me Joshua the high priest, standing before the angel of Adonai, and Satan standing at his right hand to accuse him. Adonai said to Satan, "Adonai rebukes you, Satan. Indeed, Adonai, who has chosen Jerusalem, rebukes you. Is not this man a brand plucked out of the fire?" Now Joshua was wearing filthy garments and standing before the angel who answered and spoke to those standing before him, saying, "Remove the filthy garments from him." Then to Joshua he said, "See, I have removed your iniquity from you and will dress you with fine clothing." Then I said, "Place a clean turban on his head." So they put a pure turban on his head and clothed him with garments, while the angel of Adonai stood by. The angel of Adonai exhorted Joshua, saying, "Thus says Adonai Tzvot, the Lord of hosts, if you will walk in my ways and keep my charge, then you will judge my house and watch over my courts, and I will give you a place to walk among these standing here." This is not the consecration of the Aaronic high priest, but the consecration of the eternal priest according to the order of Melchizedek. The one is a forerunner of the other. Aaron was clothed in the filth of his sin. Yeshua, our high priest, was clothed in the filth of our sin. Satan accused Aaron because of his unworthiness. Satan accuses Yeshua because of our unworthiness that he took upon himself. God himself rebukes the accuser and clothes both priests in garments of righteousness, and then he charges both to walk in his ways and keep his charge so that they may judge his house and watch over his courts. That is a remarkable picture. But it's not the end of the story. Israel's redeeming God intends that his chosen people become a kingdom of priests, entering into his presence, interceding for the entire world, and teaching the nations the difference between the holy and the profane. Our ancient Hebrew ancestors could not go there because the time had not yet come when God would remake their hearts. Today, we live in the age when he is renewing the hearts of all who answer his call to this priesthood of the believer. Like Aaron, the first high priest, and Yeshua, the high priest forever of the order of Melchizedek, we've walked through this fallen world in filthy garments, accused incessantly by our adversary. Like them, our almighty Redeemer stands ready to cleanse us and commission us for his service. The choice is ours. Accept the commission and enter into his presence, or continue to outsource our holiness and let others tell us what his presence is like.